Listening Dog Media.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to the Offside Rule, where we've got another action-packed show lined up for you today. I'm Kate Borsay, and as ever, I'm joined by two women. Well, this week, they've definitely had better weeks. First up, Hayley McQueen, fresh from watching her side lose 6-3 this weekend. Hayley, how are you?
Well, I feel a bit sick off the back of the Manchester derby, but you know what? I actually decided that day, I was like, do I stay home and watch it? But I have a little girl who just loves to get out and play. So I took her to the Henley Literary Festival for the day. And I took her to a couple of talks. Luckily, she was asleep through one of them. So was almost I. And then we went to watch medieval jousting at Stoner Park. So Luckily there was no Wi-Fi reception. I didn't know what was going on. I was stuck back in times hundreds of years ago, forgetting about the present state of Manchester United's current hell. But it was great because the jousting was red against blue. So I firmly put myself in the red. Well, the Reds won, so at least I was winning on something that day. There you go.
Love that you were living in some sort of fantasy land involving jousting then. What happened on the pitch didn't happen then, did it? Completing our trio today, Lindsay Hooper, whose side Wolves, well, they made the drastic decision to sack Bruno Lage on Sunday after a thoroughly underwhelming start to the campaign. So this week, ladies, is your, well, it's your therapy. I can't guarantee that we won't need to rake it all up again as a means of working through the collective pain. But rest assured, my couch is comfortable and there's a box of tissues just to your left. Are you ready to let it all out, Lindsay?
Yeah, I feel the angry part because sometimes I get, as you know, wound up by things. And I recorded a show straight off the bat of Wolves departing with Lage. And I tell you the thing that got me riled was the suggestions, Hayley, and I don't know whether you did this on Sky Sports News, of Sean Dyche as a possible replacement for Bruno Lage. It got me livid. Like, how lazy to just go, oh, Sean Dyche. Let's look at the manager. Yes, you know, with a bigger budget, I'm sure he's capable of achieving a lot more. But let's look at the side. Let's look at, you know, more Portuguese players than Sporting Club de Portugal. Let's look at a team that are based on guile and creativity and skill base rather than that, you know, going into war for someone. They haven't got that really. So it was not a good fit. So the more and more I went on social media and saw Sean Dyche's name, I was getting wound up, Kate.
Really, you were not liking the hashtag Sean Dyche, were you? we will go through it. Wolves does form part of the show today because we're going to ask what went wrong and where do the Midlands side go from here? Because it is the chance to do something different, but will they? Dare they? Can they break out of the mould? Or is that a mould that's ready and made and they're going to have to stay on that production line, if you see what I mean. So we'll talk about that. And with a former Scotland international digging out Sir Alex Ferguson for not picking him in the World Cup squad in 1986, a full 36 years ago, we're going to talk about football's pettiest moments. My goodness me, that's been brewing a long time. But first, with a number of new signings excelling and some struggling in the early part of this season, we're going to review some notable examples of players that fall into both camps.
Into De Bruyne, to Gomez, fast and low! Hat-trick, hat-trick, hat-trick! Three in three games at the Etihad. He's just ripping up the record books.
With over 20% of the Premier League season already played, can you believe that? It feels like as good a time as any to, well, we're going to check in on the progress of some of the players that joined new clubs during the summer. There've been some really big success stories and some who've still got, well, plenty of work to do to impress their new fan base. We're going to pick out some notable examples on both sides of the coin. I think we can all start, can't we, with Erling Haaland, who has to be the standout star, even more so after his three successive home Premier League hat-tricks. He has made easily one of the best ever starts to life in the Premier League, having not played in the league at all, hasn't he, Hayley?
I mean, what the hell? What the hell? United could have signed. Okay, no, we probably couldn't have. If he was going to come to Manchester, it was always going to be Manchester City. I do a fantasy football program every Saturday morning, and I remember at the start of the season just saying, I'm reluctant to put a City player in there, and it's a bit risky putting in a new signing, and he's still quite young. And yes, everyone's building him up, but I'm just not quite sure he's going to hit the ground running as quickly as everyone thinks. He's literally eating my words. And then, of course, he comes onto the scene, and it just explodes with... just, it's pure joy just watching him play football. And I love the fact that he is, I mean, I don't love anything about it because he's City, but as a neutral, trying to be neutral, trying to put that hat on, he is, I just love his character, his personality, his Instagram, everything about him. And the fact that he has brought that little bit of added excitement to the City team that was already exciting enough as it was, and just given that lift, hasn't he? He's an absolute star, and it kills me to watch him, but also it is just so joyful. And he's so young, and you just think, what on earth is he going to go on and achieve? And how lucky are we that we're getting to witness this in the Premier League?
I've really struggled to come up with a negative for him, to be honest, because we're meant to be giving a positive and a negative spin. I mean, it's so easy to come up with the positives for him. It's just the word I think that sums him up is effortless. And when somebody makes something look effortless and so easy, they are the master at it. I honestly think that's true in any walk of life. But we've seen other strikers in the Premier League run around for years trying to get in the right place at the right time, making different runs. I just think of all that expended energy. And Haaland just doesn't expend hardly any. He just makes a few runs, but they happen to be bang on the money every time. He's just got that ability.
We don't have to find a negative for each player. We obviously need to find players that aren't doing so well. But as you mentioned it, Linz, how's his post-match game been?
Well,
he's quite boring, isn't he? Sometimes wry.
Yep, you're spot on. So I thought the only negative I can come up with, and it's purely from a reporter's point of view, is I think sometimes his post-match interviews, he's a little bit one-wordy. I want him to expand a bit more, show us more of that character. And sometimes he can be sweary as well.
Is that his way of just not doing the interview? Is he doing it on purpose so that he gets edited down to just,
as my mum would say, if you do resort to swear words, it's usually because you can't think of anything better to say. So maybe that's his flaw.
Let's talk about other players that have made a really positive start after arriving at a new Premier League side. Haaland, of course, we're all going to agree on. Hayley, where have you gone with this one?
Right, this is a player whose transfer kind of went a little bit, not unnoticed, but sort of underground almost, unless you were a Fulham fan who got an absolute bargain with this guy. Who didn't get a bargain was Manchester City, when on the same day they signed Calvin Phillips for double the fee of this player I'm going to tell you about. And I think we all thought Calvin Phillips was going to be the one that would absolutely shine and be grabbing headlines. But yeah, absolutely very much not in the running for any praise here right now. Sorry, Calvin. However, Fulham's João Paulinho. Wolves, of course, missed out on him, didn't they, Lindsay?
Oh, yes. I was going to say, he didn't go under the radar for everyone. I was very excited of the prospect of getting him, and livid when Fulham managed to get the signature instead.
Yeah, so he signed for £17 million. He's just looking better and better and better. He's a wonderful age, 27 years old. Their midfield is just looking really impressive with him in it. He certainly lifted everybody there as well. He came through the academy at Sporting. He needed a series of loans to go to Braga before coming a regular in the side in 2021. He also helped win a first league title in 19 years that year. So he's a winner. He's a born winner. And he's winning where the stats are concerned at the moment as well. He started 7 out of 8 games. He scored against Brentford and Forest. No Premier League player can top his 29 tackles or 56 successful pressures. And actually, when you look at Europe's big five leagues, he is top of that as well. He's made more tackles than any other player. He is a tackle machine and giving Fulham greater control in games. So he is absolutely shining and looking a bargain for £17 million.
I was looking at Nick Pope, actually, and I know this is slightly dodgy territory because on an international level, he made that big blip, didn't he, against Germany, and everyone was having a bit of a go at him. Fair enough. But domestically, Nick Pope signing for Newcastle actually looks to be a really canny buy. He's got a very strong save percentage, one of the best in the league, just under 80%. For those goalkeepers that have played regularly anyway, he definitely stands out. He did struggle with his distribution back at Burnley when he was there. He was asked to play long balls into the strikers rather than attempt to pick passes to try and sort of counter for that. But I think that's something that he can work on with Eddie Howe. 4-year contract, around 10 million quid at the age of 30 for a goalkeeper. I actually think that that's has been a really good buy for Newcastle. And I think he will get better despite that confidence knock for England. I'm going to chuck William Saliba in here just as a little footnote, because he's not new to Arsenal, of course, but he's like a new signing because this is his first try really for the first team, having had loan spells at Saint-Étienne, Nice and Marseille. In fact, he had a really good season with Marseille last season, played 8 Premier League fixtures for Arsenal, formed a really good pairing at centre-back alongside Gabriel, and is really, I think, standing out absolutely within that side. So much so that I think he's challenging for a place in France's World Cup squad. He's 21. He's sort of, you know, certainly from my perspective, having not seen him as a younger player, arrived on the scene and definitely provided something for us all to be talking about. Scored his first goal for the club 2 weeks after making his debut for the side in the Premier League. And I think he's definitely proved his worth, like a new signing, not actually, but like a new signing. There's my cheeky add-on. Lindsay, who have you got?
I focused on Spurs. They are a team that I'm covering in the Champions League this season, and a couple of acquisitions where I think there are positives and negatives to both. Let's speak about Richarlison. I think he's been a brilliant addition. When Son hasn't been quite at it, I know we can just put the hat trick to one side from last weekend, but generally speaking, he hasn't quite hit the heights of where he was last season. Then Richarlison has been a brilliant selection choice for Conte to have to bring in. Now, he did brilliantly in the first game at home in the Champions League, where he scored a couple of goals. And then since, in the Premier League for the last few games, we've seen him preferred as an option because Kulusevski has got an injury. So I just think it's a really clever acquisition. You know, Richarlison isn't going to be someone that's going to be coming in and replacing Harry Kane regularly or replacing Son regularly. But what he does is he gives Conte that rotation option, and he slotted in pretty well. I think the link-up play has been impressive. The one thing I would say that maybe is more of a word of caution for Spurs is what they've done with Richarlison, Son and Kane. You've got goal scorers. You've got people that want to be that number nine, and that number nine is always going to be Harry Kane. But I honestly think that they sort of try and do the same thing, whereas Kulusevski was the one from last season that's just so much more creative. He can absolutely just flourish in the assists, whereas I always think that the others are wanting to be the goal scorers. So maybe that's a balancing act for Conte and maybe more of the negative. And then the other signing for Spurs, which we haven't seen as much of, and I'm going to try and justify why I think that is Yves Bissouma. You know, he came with a big price tag from Brighton, but he has barely been used. He's had one start, 6 cameos off the bench, 155 league minutes in total. And you think, well, why isn't he getting more? And I actually had him down as Spurs played in the Champions League away at Frankfurt in their last match.
I thought he would be one that Conte would turn to, but he actually stuck to the same team that lost the North London Derby, probably to get them to prove themselves. But what Bissouma provides in attack, I think he has, and I've already touched on this with Richarlison, I think he has enough options. So Bissouma will, as in that holding midfield role, he'll be very forward thinking. He's capable of a goal from outside the box. And I just think that his ball retention is the one thing that Conte doesn't like. Because he's a riskier player, because he takes more chances, he loses the ball. And I just think that Conte doesn't like that potential turnover. That would be my assessment anyway. But whether we see more of him as the season goes on, let's see. I would like to see more of Yves Bissouma, but at the moment he's more of a bench warmer than a starter.
Okay, let's look at the players then who we can barely make any notes on at all because they have not impressed for any number of particular reasons. Hayley, who is on your notepad as someone that you've either not seen enough or has not made a very good start to life in the Premier League?
Well, it would be Nunez at Liverpool. Sorry, Kate. Okay, we know he's had a little injury, but his life at Liverpool hasn't started brilliantly. I don't think it's been helped with the fact that he's currently playing in a side at the moment that is not looking like the Liverpool of last season. How important was Sadio Mane? Well, this season tells you everything, doesn't it?
Shouldn't
and unfortunately for Nunez, I think unfortunately for Nunez, everyone was hoping for a player to come in to almost replace Mane. Of course, they're not the same player, but he's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders. I think Jurgen Klopp is erring on the side of caution a little bit with him and being a little bit careful with him. He's in the formative stages of his Liverpool career. He's only 23 years old, but he's been on the bench for the last three matches. He introduced Diogo Jota before him in the draw with Brighton at the weekend. They dropped points for the fifth time in seven games. He then did make sure he got a run out in a competition that he does really well. And of course, he loves playing in Europe. And we know he signed from Benfica for this big fee. You're thinking, okay, Europe is where he's going to shine. Liverpool against Rangers. Rangers, I know, weren't much of a test, but he had four shots on target in the first half and just didn't manage to convert any. You could say maybe he's a little bit unlucky. And he did start off not too badly at the very, very early stages of the season, but that's almost forgotten because what we do remember about him and his start of his career at Liverpool is the three-match ban for the violent conduct, making his full debut, wasn't it, on Crystal Palace's, oh my gosh, who was it? Joachim Andersen. So I just think for Nunez, you do kind of worry about what's going to happen, how this is going to affect him. But if anybody is going to protect him, look after him and nurture him, it is going to be Jurgen Klopp and give him maybe a little bit of time because there are signs there of brilliance. It just, whether he's just been unlucky, I don't know.
Yeah, obviously adapting to the Premier League is a big thing for Nunez, but at least he's had some game time. Unlike my pick, Arthur Melo, who's had just 13 minutes of game time in the Premier League.
Unlucky.
Yes. Now, we should caveat this, by the way, with the fact that he was a deadline day signing. He was signed for the midfield after Jordan Henderson picked up that injury against Newcastle. So he's only on loan and he was meant to be a bit of a patch job, but he's not even patching. Like, he's had 13 minutes of game time. Clearly, match fitness is an issue, which would lead me to ask why on earth he was an acquisition if he's not, you know, clearly he's not sharp enough. Yeah. His agents come out and defended him because he has had some criticism. The guy's 26 years old, so it's not as if he is a young player trying to get to grips with it all. He did move from Juventus and, you know, it is a loan with an option to buy at the end of the season. But his agents come out and said, look, there's a big difference between Serie A and the Premier League. Okay, fair enough. Tell us what we already know. But that hasn't, you know, hasn't affected other players, has it? With Liverpool's midfield so underwhelming at the moment, he's still not getting a start. He's still not making inroads there. So that would lead me to say he's on my negatives list, just as at the moment, a pretty pointless signing. Lindsay.
One of the players that left Wolves this summer was Leander Dendonka. He went to Aston Villa. Have we seen anything of Dendonka? Was that a good move? No. There's so many that are just absent at the moment. I think that there's quite a few Watford players in the past that have come with such a big billing and haven't delivered. You know, that they've done well at Watford for a while. They have what I would call a purple patch, whereby they score a few goals, they get talked about, they provide a few assists, they're going to be the next big thing. And then I've just not seen that go on in this case yet. So Emmanuel Dennis joined Forest, and he was a player at Watford when I was covering them that was supposedly, you know, going to take the Premier League by storm. Well, we're still waiting for him to take the Premier League by storm. Signed by Forest for 20 million. I think it goes as high as that anyway, the deal. I just think because he is meant to be providing the goals, and that is what they're lacking at the moment, Forest. So there must be a lot of scrutiny on Dennis and when he's going to start delivering. He provided 10 goals and 6 assists in 33 league games last season. But that was for a Watford side who, let's face it, were below average, weren't they, for most of the season. So fitness, is that part of it? I don't think he ever really recovered from... Do you remember when he went on international duty and he wasn't allowed to go, and then he was, and then he wasn't? I'm just not sure whether there's something here that's just not clicking right now.
But he hasn't really been given a chance, has he? So do you say he's not been given a chance, or do you just say that he's not ready? Maybe it is a fitness issue.
Well, you're right. He's only had 4 substitute appearances. But what we have to take from that is that in training, he's not showing enough. And that's with any of these. You know, when we mentioned Phillips just, and I've mentioned Dendonka, you know, maybe they're not showing enough in training. But when we talk about Yves Bissouma not getting as much for Spurs, I think that's Conte saying what I'm seeing on a day-to-day basis is dictating my team selection, and he's not doing enough. So these players aren't doing enough in training.
You know how many games we lost in the first 7-8 games that we did when we played with the strike in the first 11? We never lost. When we start with the strike in the first 11, we never lost one game in the Premier League. So we know Premier League is so important. Again, this is not an excuse, but this is a fact.
Next up, Lindsay's excited about this one. Or maybe it's a chance for her to issue her manifesto on Wolves. Where do Wolves go next? What the blip is going on there? Yet another manager gone, Lindsay Hooper. Bruno Lage's 17-month stint in charge of the club came to an end on Sunday following their 2-0 defeat to West Ham on Saturday. Currently sitting 18th in the table, they're looking for their second manager in 2 seasons. A pretty daunting season ahead, really. Are things as bad as they appear on paper? Did Lage really deserve the sack? Let's get some intel from Lindsay Hooper and some opinion from Hayley McQueen on this one. Look, Lage had a good start to life at Wolves, didn't he, last season? The club were challenging for European football before it all ended very badly. Saw them slip to 10th in the table. Big turnover of players this year. Clearly, that was one way to try and deal with it. But the poor runs continued, Lindsay, even after spending over 100 million in the summer. So was this a case of it not clicking under Lage and not looking like it was going to readjust, that the script was going to change after all these signings?
You're right to focus on now. And that bad streak, Kate, if you go back to last season, goes back 15 games. So this isn't a dip in form. This is a period of underperforming. So yeah, we'll go back to the beginning and when Lage showed a bit more promise in a second. But I was at this game at London Stadium on Saturday where West Ham won 2-0. And I didn't think West Ham played particularly well. In fact, if you look at the possession stats, which has been the case for Wolves, I think, gosh, for the last 15 games probably, where we've still not done very well, is that possession-wise, Bruno Lage has got this team playing and holding on to the ball and playing some nice football. They just have an inability to be able to put it in the back of the net. However, I will say that on Saturday, there was a toothlessness to the performance. I felt I could sense a lack of belief from the Wolves players. Something had gone, something had been lost, so much so that way before it was announced, I just said, I think he's gone. I think he's gone after this.
Oh, interesting.
So let's go back to when it was good. He inherited a brilliant team from Nuno Espirito Santo. Let's remember that. Nuno is the messiah at Wolverhampton Wanderers. He turned everything around. I've never known a manager leave a club and have a open-top bus parade effectively outside the stadium on his last game. And you have to say that for Bruno Lage, he inherited a lot that was good. So I think that early stretch, he was going to do well because he got great players. This is a team full of fantastic talent. I think that Fosun have backed him in the summer window and bought him brilliant talent. I also think that there's been an unfortunate series of events when it comes to strikers at Wolves. We know that Jimenez has now been out for some time. He had that awful injury at Arsenal with the fractured skull. I don't think he's ever been the same since that. I think in terms of backup, Fabio Silva wasn't delivering for Lage. He's gone out on loan to Anderlecht and he's scoring loads of goals. We bring in Kaladic from Austria, this Austrian international. He gets injured. The last thing I saw about him with this injury is that he's hoping he might get a few minutes before the end of the season. Guys, we're only just out of September. So this is a player that we brand new bought who's good for nothing for a year. I mean, it's just unfortunate.
But it's an ACL injury, isn't it? So it's not being kind of harsh on him. That is how long
but
it takes.
But a bad one, Kate. I mean, you read between the lines, this is a bad one. You'd expect some players to maybe come back a bit earlier than that. But the prognosis is that he's going to be ready for next summer. And then we do bring in Diego Costa. We had a period with him on Saturday where I did think that Wolves looked better, but he's clearly off the pace. He hadn't had a competitive game since January. I do think he can make the difference. But ultimately, I think from a Bruno Lage tactical point of view, he was absolutely hell-bent on having a back four. He let Connor Cody go. Yeah. He's let Willy Bolly go. And I actually think that this was a game which came and bit him on the ass, because actually he was forced, because of Nathan Collins' suspension, to play with a back three. And who could he have done with? Connor Cody. What did he do? Put Neves, one of our only attacking outlets that scored goals so far this season, from midfield as centre back. So I think it was lost from then. I don't know why he didn't go with Toti Gomez as the defender and not Neves. I've got no idea. But it just said to me that he'd lost his way and he'd lost the dressing room.
Hayley, there is a huge, you know, obviously a huge Portuguese connection at the club. And it does lead me to ask whether there is too much reliance on Portuguese players, but also Portuguese managers, and the link that they have with Jorge Mendes as well, Cristiano Ronaldo's agent. He's been pivotal to so many signings at the club. Whether that is all too cozy, or actually whether that model of working very closely with a particular league or a country, a selection of players, whether that is the way to go or not.
They keep doing it, don't they? There's a couple of names that have been linked at the moment. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. At the moment, their number one target is Sporting boss Ruben Amorim. He's only 37 years old, new to management. He actually started the 2018-19 season with Portuguese third-tier side Casapia. You know them. He did then make his way on to Braga and then to Sporting, and he won the league with Sporting in 2021. That was their first in 19 years. Mentioned it before with a certain player, and he was the manager. Now, they won two of their opening Champions League games, of course, after then suffering defeat, but they would cost Wolves 20 million euros to get him out of his contract. Now, is he worth it? Who is he? Who is he?
I know it's good for you to be kept busy, Hayley, on screen, and, you know, adding another manager to this list and someone that you can talk about, but I'll save you loads of time because it's going to be Lopetegui. I'm convinced of that. The reason being, he has already got an association with some of the key big influences in this dressing room. Neves has come out and said, I'd like Lopetegui to get the job. Now, for me, if Neves is saying that, I'm on board, because he's our best player, one of two best players, I think. And you've got to look at what he's achieved. He's worked with Neves before. He was manager of Porto. He'll know quite a few of the players. And it comes back to what Hayley was saying about the expense. Now, Wolves spent a lot of money this summer. It is, and we have to bring in the business angle of this, but Fosun haven't been doing well as a company. Of course, they're multi-millionaires, billionaires even, but they have made a loss on Wolves for a couple of years now with the pandemic, and the business hasn't been going as well. I can't see them paying to get the sporting manager out of that contract, whereas Lopetegui's there ready to go and he can be an immediate appointment.
He's set to leave Sevilla, isn't he, in the coming days? I don't think that's happened just yet as we're recording this. But weren't Wolves after Lopetegui back in 2016? Lopetegui turned them down to then manage Spain.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can understand
that.
Which
you can understand.
If you want to manage your national side, there's a lot of English managers that would take the England job, wouldn't they, over a club job if they got offered it. So I'd forgive him for that. I mean, obviously the Spain job ended disastrously for him because he was being he was being tapped up by so many people at that time. His stock was really high. This has meant that he's had a period now of adjustment. You know, I think at Sevilla, yes, he's had some success. I think he's also learned a lot. There's clearly something that's appetizing for him about coming over and working in the Premier League. And he's spoken very highly about Wolves on a few occasions and saying, I very nearly ended up in Wolverhampton if it hadn't have been for that Spain job. And I'm thinking, Spain, Wolverhampton. Yeah, you probably made the right choice in 2016 for that.
Maybe. And look, Sevilla with him as manager won the Europa League in 2020 in his first season. Who did they beat in the quarterfinals? Wolves.
Oh,
so there's some nice symmetry.
But there is some nice symmetry. And I honestly think Wolves would have won the Europa League had it not been for Sevilla. They knocked us out, but I think we were that good, we'd have won if it had not been for Sevilla.
So look, even though Sevilla are about to get rid of him, he's won only one of their opening seven league games. They're just sitting above the relegation zone as we record this. Even though it's all gone wrong this season, we think he is prime for the picking by Wolves. And he's got enough association with that sort of Portuguese bed of players there that he's going to get on okay.
I mean, we don't know, do we, how it's going to go. If only we could all have that lovely fortune-telling ability.
But are you happy for him to... Because I think the most frustrating thing for Wolves fans is this constant conveyor belt of managers, all sort of, you know, arguably fairly similar, all with that Portuguese link anyway. And it's just whether Lopetegui is going to be different enough, Linds, to make a difference.
If he's good enough for Neves, he's good enough for me. And that is how I feel about it. I think if he can get this dressing room back on side, there's enough talent there for them to really dig in and put in some brilliant performances. He's got to obviously work on the striking point of view, because I cannot believe for a second that there aren't more goals in this team, even without a fit, firing striker. So that's going to be his first task. I mean, there is a part of me that's very dreamy that thinks, you know, Tuchel's available. He liked England.
I mean, Hayley, what about you? Come in on those
dreams there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could probably dismiss that one.
Yeah, I think you definitely need to get a bit realistic here.
I know,
Lindsay.
One day.
You know, you can but dream. That's absolutely fine. All right, with regards to stats and shooting, so you need somebody coming in who knows how to get your side firing. The shots per game, however, had gone from Nunez's time from 10.6, that was 18th in terms of shots, right up to 10th position in terms of shots, to 12.1, and the share of possession as well from the 11th best to the 7th. So you might keep hold of the ball well. You are scoring a few more goals. It's marginally improved, but definitely needs to be a bit more. 3-8 games this season, 20th in the division. In fact, every side bar West Ham has scored at least double that number. So I think, yeah, you need to be scoring goals and you need to make sure you have a manager who can get your side firing and, yeah, stop you from being potentially relegated, Lindsay. Relegated.
Oh my goodness me. Yeah. Look, let's focus forward. They've decided to do something about it. So there you go. Out goes Large and in comes, well, Lindsay's got her fingers crossed for Julen Lopetegui, but let's see what happens by this time next week. You're listening to The Offside Rule with Kate Borsay, Hayley McQueen and Lindsay Hooper. Quick shout for our Athletic Women's Football podcast. Lindsay in the hot seat for this one, hosting the brilliant former Lioness Laura Bassett and The Athletic's Charlotte Harper. And up for discussion in the podcast this week, I know, Lindsay, you've been talking about the fact that 50 years on, the Lionesses team of 1972 having to pay their own way, really, to receive the tributes that they're in line for on Friday when the Lionesses play USA. You've been speaking to Jeannie Allott. She spent around £500 to get her cap. Of course, 50 years on from her scoring in England's first official international, she was just 15.
Yeah, that has took off somewhat, I think, that revelation. She does live in the Netherlands at the moment, which is why it would cost so much for her to come over. I mean, just hearing the backstory, though, Kate, which is something that I think we all need to educate ourselves in and do, not have these women be forgotten, which they were for 50 years. Let's make sure that their stories are prime and centre. And hers is a fantastic one. She was the youngest player in the team for that first international
15.
At Wembley. Well, yeah, and she said she was 8 years old when the ban happened, you know, when the ban was affecting her, and she was pulled to one side and told she couldn't play with the boys anymore at school. And I think really when you hear that lasting effect that it's had on her just in this interview alone, you know, this 50 years on, and you can tell. But I think it's really important that we do pay our respects to these women. So if you are going to the match on Friday night, huge round of applause, please, for the legends who will be in the Lionesses Legends Lounge.
Arsene has also said that comments coming from managers saying that they are not in the title race come out of a fear of failure. Do you have a fear of failure?
You know, he is a specialist in failure. I'm not. So if supposedly he is right and I am afraid of fail, it's because I don't fail many times.
Okay, topic three, pettiest football moments. We've been inspired after former Scotland striker David Speedy tweeted a picture of Sir Alex Ferguson looking, well, pretty miserable, fair enough, during the Manchester derby on Sunday with the caption, "It's how I felt when he left me out of the 86 World Cup squad. Long may it continue." Harsh. Well, we've decided it's time to review football's pettiest moments with that in mind. Hayley, where have you gone with this?
Okay, yeah, I've got a funny one, and this was something that I'd remembered from Sky Sports News. We used to have a social desk where we'd go through kind of tweets and Instagram and things that have happened. And I remember the spat between Leeds United and Niall Horan of One Direction. Do you remember this? So it was Leeds criticising, well, kind of mocking Derby after their playoff final defeat to Aston Villa. And Leeds United had tweeted Niall Horan, who'd obviously put like a little crying emoji saying how sad he was for, you know, deciding he's a big Derby County fan. Leeds United sent a little tweet saying, "Hopefully you performed better than Derby County official. See you next season. Hashtag stop crying." Then Niall Horan tweeted and retweeted that, replying, saying, "Between Derby County and I, we've played at Wembley more times in the last 12 years than you." And then Leeds United responded with hashtag bring back One Direction. No one likes your solo career. And then Niall Horan responded, "No one likes Leeds." It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. So Niall Horan was trending. You'd think, oh, maybe he's released a new single. But no, he got in a little bit
basically
of a...
basically fallen out with the whole of Leeds.
Yeah, so there you go.
We're going to be celebrating 10 years of this podcast, ladies, this month. And I have to say that one of our favourite people over those 10 years to talk about has got to be who?
Balotelli?
Ibrahimovic?
Yes. Balotelli, Hayley. Ooh. You just stepped right in there. I thought this was hilarious. You've got to go back to 2016 for this one. But Jamie Carragher posted on Twitter, "Balotelli on a free is still paying over the odds by Nice," when he was available. Balotelli then replied saying, "Jamie Carragher, bad player, wonderful hater, who cares?" And then put a trophy with best hater on there. And Carragher then came back and said, "I wish him well in getting the Ballon d'Or at Nice," which was also just sparking it. I just thought it's petty, these to and fros. There's so many examples of this. Gary Lineker and Solado, Joey Barton's involved in loads of them as well.
But also grown-up men, by and large, doing that over social media. Was this petty or not? I don't know. You can decide, maybe both of you. When Adebayor left Arsenal, obviously, it was all very controversial. Joined Manchester City. And do you remember him scoring in front of the visiting fans in his first game against Arsenal at the Etihad in basically what was the ultimate middle finger? He ran 120 yards to celebrate scoring in front of the visiting fans, his former Arsenal fans. Was that petty? Was that fair enough? I think I'd call that one petty. And then, look, maybe this one, petty or not petty, again, I'll ask you to decide. Gareth Bale, you know, do you remember when Gareth Bale was constantly benched by Real Madrid? He was on the subs bench more than the coaches at one stage.
I know what you're going to say.
And he'd do like just random things, like make binoculars out of pieces of paper or out of his fingers. And I wonder actually whether that was petty and that it was disrespectful to his manager, Zinedine Zidane, and his teammates, or actually because he knew that a camera was going to be trained on him 100% of the time, maybe he was just having fun. Maybe that was his way of ribbing whoever the poor person was who decided to spend most of their time just filming or taking photographs of him and not what was actually happening on the pitch. What do you think, Lynn's petty or fair enough?
Well, I think that's the problem, is that if we get rid of ribbing altogether, then we lose some brilliant moments. So if we're critical and calling it petty, I don't know where it falls. Like a really recent one was Gabrielle, wasn't it? Where Ivan Toney, when Brentford beat Arsenal on the opening day last season, said, nice kickabout with the boys or with the lads. And then Gabrielle said, after Arsenal beat Brentford this time 3-0, nice kickabout with the boys. But it wasn't the only one. I think someone else had done it as well. So I think Toney was just like, yeah, I've heard this twice now. So does that get petty because it's a repeated joke? I think the first time it's funny, isn't it? And then any more than that, it becomes petty.
All right. Well, if you've got any suggestions, send them in at Offside Rule Pod. There are plenty of petty moments to mention. So get them in. Let us know what you think. Let's move on to a bit of any other business now. Lynn, what have you got?
Two stories I don't want to be forgotten. They have happened in the last couple of weeks. So people listening might be thinking, oh, I saw that. Wanted to bring it to people's attention if they hadn't. Number one, we've seen Ted Lasso, haven't we? Pretty much at most football matches in England over the last week. Ted Lasso and AFC Richmond are going to be in FIFA 23. So if you've seen the new game that's come out, they're in it. I love that. I love that they've managed to get
that's
in the
cool.
game. And my other, which Hayley, I'm sure, will be aware of because it was all over Sky Sports, but not anything that we've discussed. We love these sorts of stories as well. Football in strange places. We've done high altitudes, low altitudes, bizarre locations around the world. Luis Figo, Portugal legend, helped set a world record for the highest football game played at an altitude of 20,230 feet in zero gravity conditions. Did you see any of these videos? They're up in the sky.
I can only imagine. That sounds ludicrous.
Love it. Check it out.
Go and check it out. Listen, it seems that former Arsenal player Henry Lansbury, who's now at Luton, is a big lawn enthusiast. I love these random hobbies. He loves a bit of lawn mowing, basically. So much so that he scored a brilliant goal, a real wonder goal, actually, in Luton's 2-0 win at Hull City on Friday night. And what was his goal celebration? Well, it was him mowing the lawn. He was asked about it afterwards by Sky Sports, actually. Fellow Luton player Carlton Morris was asked about the quality of Lansbury's grass at the training ground, because basically the club's groundsman, knowing what an enthusiast Lansbury is, he basically gave him a section of the club's training ground, his own personal area to look after. This is what Carlton Morris said about it.
Honestly, it's like a bowls pitch. Like he knows his way around the garden, that's for sure.
Well, that's good. Listen, can you do me a favour a minute, Carl? Can you just hold on to that?
Yeah, of course.
Henry, can I just have a word with you about my lawn at home? Because as you can probably see, we've got a lot of green. And there's these little brown patches that are worrying me. What would you do?
Reseed it.
Reseed it. There we go. Thanks very much. Well done. You are the Sky Bet player of the match. Carlton, do the honours. Reseeding, yeah? Reseeding. Lovely. Going to do that.
There you go. I loved that. Loved that from this week.
These are just a few little headlines that you may or may not have missed. As a Manchester United fan, definitely missed out on the opportunity. Apparently, Eric Cantona had a meeting with Manchester United. He'd gone to a game and said, I'd love to be your president of football. I want to offer my services to you. And Ed Woodward turned him down. Yeah, turned him down and said, no, thank you. We don't a president of football. Yeah, so you wonder how that would have changed things over the last season or so. I'm like, Ed, do you know who this guy is? He's an absolute living legend. If he's offering his services, snap his hands off.
But president of football,
why not? Come on, just get, or have him in as an ambassador and just bring him down to the training ground just for the laughs.
But an ambassador is very different to a president of football.
But it is. But also, but still,
I mean, I don't know about his decision making. I don't quite know what he's been doing in football for the last goodness knows how long. But he would have maybe diverted a little bit of attention away from the bigger stories that are happening with Harry Maguire and Ronaldo.
Maybe that's so it's where kind it's of, all gone wrong.
There was a French under-18s game. Now, you think the future of national football in France is going to have improved after sort of, you know, how they've crashed and burned dismally in the last few years, that's for sure. They're trying to get themselves back on track. You think, okay, it's the future's in the youth. Well, four players were red carded in an under-18s game and it had to be abandoned. So things not looking
read about
good
this.
There in France.
There was a headbutt as well, wasn't there, and a really bad tackle as well. Not to be condoned, kids.
It was France under-18 against Poland, and it all happened within about 20 minutes of the game as well. And afterwards, actually, Bernard Diomede, the former Liverpool winger and 1998 World Cup winner, was unable to calm his players down and said, you know, for some, there may not be a return to the France team because they have to understand things. I will punish players who've behaved badly. You would not want to be in that dressing room feeling the wrath of the manager after that, and maybe potentially ruining things going forward for their, you know, future involvement with the national team. So that was a bit of a shame to read about that. But yeah, the naughty French, they just can't control themselves.
On that note, we can, and we need to head off right now. Thank you so much, Hayley and Lindsay. Thank you for listening as well, by the way. If you want to get your feedback in, tell us what you're liking or you're not liking. Remember, it's at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and on Instagram, and our brilliant website as well, offsideRulePodcast.com, one to check out. Plenty of fresh, unique content on there. What do your next few days look like, Hayley?
Well, I'll be with Lindsay in the studio on Sky Sports. She'll be coming in to chat all things WSL. I've got a quiet couple of days. I've had a very busy week. I was with Roberto Martin last night, which was great fun, and Hope Powell and Paul Nevin, who's part of the England coaching setup. So we were discussing actually diversity and inclusion, which was really interesting. So I'm about to sit down and type out some of the conversation that I had with Roberto Martinez, and yeah, I might pop that on my social media. And I never like to ask for selfies when I'm with players, but I just had to because I thought if he wins the World Cup, I've missed an absolute trick here, haven't I? So yeah, I'll be popping that on the gram. But apart from that, yeah, in Sky Sports News, just having a little bit of a fun and then heading off to an LMA event after the weekend. Once we all get together in person ahead of the next record of the podcast, so that'll be fun.
Yes, absolutely. All righty, well, we will leave it there. Lindsay, I'm sure you're up and down the country in your car over the next few days, so we'll catch up next time. See you later.
See ya.
And Hayley, bye to you as well.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything offside at offsideRulePodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app.
The Athletic.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.